Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Good evening, ladies.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Brad. Happy birthday to you. Gotcha. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Doing good, thank you. Yeah, I can start the show. Thank you very much. So, sorry for being interrupted there. Welcome to episode 3, season 5 of the Standoff with Brad and Richie here on New Zealand Sport Radio. We're here live every Wednesday on Facebook throughout the season. Richard, as always, is having technical difficulties. So he hasn't been able to log on yet. Paul's going to try to work on getting him on, so I may as well just keep going until Richard sorts his shit out, really. So while we're here live on Wednesday evenings at 8 p.m., you can also catch our show at your convenience on iHeartRadio and Spotify. Just remember to search for New Zealand Sport Radio. As always, we're going to cover everything you need to know on the week that was Rugby League, including our top stories of the week, a review of the Round 1 matches. We'll then stop and answer some questions from you guys, as well as some we've got prepared for each other. We'll then preview Round 2 and talk about what our picks are before ending a night with a recap of the Super League. So remember to send us comments and questions throughout the show, and I may as well jump into the stories of the week.
Before you do that, we should get through the other things I've got planned for you.
So, like what?
Well, you have a kiss planned for you. Here, kiss for your birthday.
It's even worse that that's a Dragons player. Yeah, okay. So, yeah, the cat's out of bag. It's my birthday today, and I'm doing a show here instead of doing anything with anyone else. So you're welcome. Be nice if Richard turned up, but it is what it is. And Paul's having fun with all his little pictures there. So I'll bring the first story up. I don't know if Paul was going to jump in at any time. He usually does. But Graham Ellerslie has defended the NRL's decision to keep the identity of the Dally M voters anonymous after some severe criticism from some of the points given in round one, mainly the Hammer and Nicho Hynes, who were not the best players in their respective games. But Nicho, for example, in the Warriors game, he got 6 points, which is the most you can get. And I don't even think he was the best player in his team, let alone the whole game. Hammer was kind of the same. He made a lot of mistakes. A couple of them led directly to tries. And a lot of people just up in arms about, you know, who are these idiots voting on these things? We kind of talked about it a bit last year that when Sean didn't get the Dally M at the end of the year, it's not a popularity contest, but it's people's individual ideas putting votes out. We don't have to agree with them. But yeah, I don't take the Dally M's as seriously as I used to anyway. I think the RLPA awards are the ones you take more note of. They're the ones voted by the actual players for the players. But yeah, I'm sure Richard would have had some great feedback on it. But I don't know about you, Paul. They don't really do this in rugby union, which is your forte. But
Yeah, but they've had the Twain Monkley Medal for NPC, for example.
Yeah.
And they've tried a number of different ways of doing it. One was the referees actually graded the players. Another one was the opposition or the head coach of each team would go 3-2-1 of the best players on the opposition, which I thought was kind of a nice one. So I think something along those sort of lines where you've actually got like your coaches or your referees or someone who's actually really in the game giving the points rather than pundits who are kind of like, oh, he scored 3 tries, absolutely, and miss all of the hard work that goes on. I think, getting that your opposition coach do 3-2-1 to me would be the best way of doing it.
Yeah, and I know all the voters are former players, but you don't know like if the former player has a bias or not, which we all do. I'm sure if it was me voting a Warriors game.
And if they even bloody watched the game. I mean, just because they've been paid to give an opinion doesn't mean they've actually watched the game. I mean, the amount of pundits you hear come on and go, oh, I talk about a game, you're like, have you watched that team for the past 3 weeks? I mean, so, I mean, ex-players are not necessarily great at watching all the games.
I do it every Wednesday, Paul.
You're not an ex-player.
Yeah. When Richard finally gets on, I'll get him to do a quick run back on his thoughts on it, but we'll move on. So the ban for Spencer Leniu has been given out, which we'll discuss in the Naughty Boy corner a bit later. But the Roosters have confirmed after the verdict that they're going to put their entire club through cultural training. I don't see it hurting. I think a lot of people have said a lot of the situation with Spencer Leniu is more on the side of ignorance than any malice. So this is a way to stop that as a potential thing happening in the future, be it if you agree with the punishment or not. It can't hurt to get a bit more of a cultural awareness, I guess, going through your teams, especially in a club like or a team a competition like the NRL where there are so many cultures mixing and mingling. So I don't see any issues with that. But I'll continue with the Roosters. There have been some murmurs. I might grab Paul again at some point. Sorry, Paul. But there's been murmurs that Joseph Suaalii might be trying to get out of his contract with Australian Rugby. The Rugby Australian Chief Executive Phil Waugh has confirmed that they're not going to let him out of his contract. But it sounds like the Roosters are doing everything they can from a legal aspect to try to get that contract broken and keep him. I don't know, Paul, what do you reckon? He signed a massive deal. I know there's a bit of trouble with money with Australian Rugby. So I think there was a quote from Phil Waugh basically saying, like, the amount of money they were throwing at this guy, if they rip up the contract and walk away, it's another bad look for the organization. But what do you do?
Okay, yeah, it's another bad look for the organization, yes. But do you really want your highest paid player to be the guy who doesn't want to play your sport at the end of the day? I mean, there's if you've only got so much money, where do you want to be throwing it? And I think throwing it at players like this was a bad move in the first place, put bluntly. You're throwing money at a guy who doesn't have a record of playing top-level rugby union. Is he going to be any good? You don't know. Vunivalu, for example, who's at the Reds at the moment, has not set the world on fire, let's be blunt. Look, to me, yes, it's a bad look. And I think it should have been, if a quieter way of some of the Roosters being able to buy him out of the contract would have been the best way forward. Now it's made it kind of flash like now it's become a kind of a media thing. Then it's not good to get it in the spotlight like that though.
No, and Simon's mentioned Rugby Australia needs to keep every penny they've got because they don't have enough money to keep to save one of their franchises, which is is that Melbourne?
Yeah, so Melbourne's at the moment gone bust. And Rugby Australia has said they'll fund it to the end of the year. So they get this, or at least this season, rather than the end of the year. So, yeah, we'll have to see if they exist beyond that.
Yeah, okay. And we may as well keep the rugby union train going because the Dragons have rumoured to be interested in luring Wallaby Jordan Pitaia, I think is his name. to the club. His contract ends with Rugby Union at the end of this year. So I couldn't even tell you who he was if I hit him with a car, Paul. But
had a few injuries, which is going to be a bit of his problem, to be honest with you. But yeah, very mercurial player. So someone you're going to want to play on the edges, can play sort of centre wing even fullback. So yeah, he's someone you're going to play in the on your edges somewhere in rugby league. Good player, but one of those ones that's been hindered by injury and hasn't quite reached the promise that we thought he might do about 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay, cool. And I'll keep the Dragons train rolling since Paul and Richie made it very clear they wanted it to be all about the Dragons tonight on my birthday.
It's all about you on your birthday.
There's been a lot of noise coming out of the camp that Zach Lomax has requested a release from the Dragons after his relocation to the wing. But it's been denied. Shane Flanagan's come out and said there's no way they're letting Zach Lomax go. Just seems to be the what was happening with Ben Hunt now moved to Zach Lomax. So Dragons always seem to want to have a year where they've got a player that really doesn't want to be there. I suppose it's a bit different. Ben Hunt didn't want to be there because the team wasn't playing well. Zach doesn't want to be there because he doesn't want to be on the wing. So it's a different circumstance. I don't know. I don't see why any player would want to be at the Dragons anyway. So I understand that side of it. But yeah, just because you move to the wing, it brings up a lot of questions because he gets paid far too much to be a winger.
I scored a try, got 4 conversions this weekend.
He played bloody well on the wing. I give you that. Yeah.
On this, and you've started your season the best you've ever done for within living memory, with a 28-4 win, and this is the news story. They're just shooting themselves in the foot, aren't they? It's just come on, enjoy, make the most of it. Of all the times to say I want to leave is when the team's done had its best, had a wonderful start to the season. Just doesn't help.
Yeah. And then I think that's the last of my Dragon stuff until hopefully we do the review. So I'll go back to Graham Allensley again. He came out in his weekly I'm sorry segment he does about the referees. And he said that the Cowboys penalty try that they were awarded was the incorrect call and should have only been a penalty. It's good to see he's come out and said it was wrong. Everyone talked about it. It didn't affect the game. The game was well and truly over by that point, but you still don't want to see a simple mistake like that happen in the first week. Especially I think there was more argument for a penalty try in the Warriors game that wasn't even given a penalty, really. There was more argument that one could have been a try than what happened with the one in the Cowboys game. But, yeah, we talk about it every week on here, Paul, as I'm sure you know by listening to us in the background. These refs, they have their ups and downs, but the ups are very rare, unfortunately. I guess the only thing with a ref, it happens in Union too, the only time you know a ref has done a good job is when no one's talking about them at all.
Exactly. The refs don't want to be talked about if they can be. You got to say that, if you're going to make mistakes, I guess beginning of the season is when it's going to happen while you're getting up to speed. Yeah. Hope that we get rid of them now. So when at the point end of the season where it matters, we've got correct calls.
Yeah, and Nicholas has made a comment saying, have I ever been asked for ID at a licensed venue? I don't know how old you are, but you don't look a day over 18. I get asked for ID whenever I don't have a beard, which is why the beard stays. I'm 39 today. Yeah, I'm 39 today. Unlike Richie, who was 40 a few weeks ago. So I'm still the young one. But I'm getting there. Unfortunately, it's creeping up. But we'll move on now. I, I'm I'm a baby without a beard. That's all I can say. The West Tigers have yet to play this season, Paul. But that hasn't stopped the dramas. Well, with one of their major sponsors, FAB Industrial Logistics, they've walked out on the club following what it deemed disrespectful treatment. The sponsor, I looked at it, the sponsors apparently donated $800K to the club, but it's pulled its support after the interim Tiger CEO, Shane Richardson, raised the idea of putting Allied Express on the jersey too, because FAB is a jersey sponsor, but Allied Express is a direct competitor to them. So they didn't like the idea of having a direct competitor also named on the jersey.
Sherlock, on that one. Come on, that's basic sponsorship. Is you choose one person from each vertical or from each category. It's not like you have Duracell and Eveready both on different arms of the jersey, right? Come on, yeah. Choose one battery. That's it. This smacks of, oh, my mate's head of this company, I want them on my jersey, please. Or a little backhander or something. But they give me better dinners. It's very amateur behavior by a CEO or whatever.
Yeah. Well, we were kind of hoping everything like this would go once they got rid of the old one and, you know, cleaned out a bit of the boardroom and, like, we're going to start being a sensible club and running things properly now, and then they do this. It'd be like if we were sitting on here talking about how Cameron George and the Warriors have now trying to get Spark on their jersey to go with One New Zealand. It's a branded move that you think, I don't know Shane Richardson that well, obviously, but you think going into that type of field, you'd have a bit of business acumen there. And this seems like one of the first things you would learn.
This smacks of old boys club on this sort of thing. Yeah. So on that one, Nicholas says, I hear things fall off when you turn 40. Paul, can you confirm? Absolutely. I can confirm you. All sorts of bits have fallen off. That's why you got the hat on top.
I still have my hair. I'm falling apart anyway, Nicholas, before 40. Last bit before we get into signings, the Warriors have discussed, I think they've almost 100% confirmed it, but they've discussed opening a Warriors-themed pub in the past few months. It now looks like it's a step closer with news that they have purchased Hollyhop in Kingsland, which is, you know, just down the road from Eden Park. There's been no official announcement from the club, but it seems to have been confirmed. I listened on the way to work this morning on SENZ. They had, I can't remember who he was. He was something to do with sport in Wellington years ago. I think he was either managing a soccer team or a basketball team. And he also was in the food industry, owning restaurants and bars. And he basically went on a tirade saying it's the stupidest thing they could do. Don't do it. It's a bad idea. They've got big egos, and that's why they're trying to do it. I don't have any knowledge on that industry, really. And from what I've heard in interviews with Cameron George when he was floating the idea, all the teams, Paul, in Australia, they have, like, leagues clubs and pokie machines and things like that that help get money into the club, where we, with our rules here, can't do things like that. So opening a bar is a way to do that, and it's also a place you could go in and call the shots and run, like, venue participation things for away games. Would I go to Kingsland to go watch the Warriors? Probably not. With my Sky at home, it's a bit far away for me, who doesn't like to leave a kilometer from my house. But it should be a good venue, I guess. There's a lot of traffic when Eden Park's got events on down that way. as well. And it's not like you can have a bar in Penrose where the stadium is, because there's not much out there.
Yes and no. Holly Hop. It's a pretty cracking bar where it is, and the way it's set up at the moment. So it's not a bad one to buy. But why put it next? Why are you buying a bar next to Weedon Park when that's not your vibe? That's not your thing. It's totally the wrong location for me. If you're going to get one of these, either you do something like on the viaduct and do it right central and try and make it a tourist destination kind of thing, or you do it out where the stadium is. Because they've got that one. There is a bar actually, or is it a venue kind of thing, literally outside the stadium, isn't there? That sometimes they do member things for and stuff.
Yeah, what it's called. Lily World.
There you go.
So you can take over. I was there in the weekend.
Yeah, you can take over like a Lily World and do it there. Then it's a venue that people go to pre-game on match day, and a place that people can go to on non-match days. We could open it up, but no one's going to go to Holly Hop on match day before going to Mount Smart, for example.
Yeah.
So, to me, the wrong location for my point of view, not necessarily a bad idea, but it all comes down to how well you execute it. Because yes, it can be a diversified income stream, which is what Simon says. But then again, we also know that income stream is patchy at best. Get yourself a COVID and you shut down for 12 months. Then what are you going to do? I think just wrong location, putting it next to the park.
And like Simon said, their idea is to open more than one. So it could be just they've got one that's in a solidified area that they're going to start with to learn what to do before they go out and break into other areas. Time will tell. I don't know how often I would go due to where it is anyway. I guess it's for people that don't want to go to stadium or can't get tickets, they can go into the city or whatever. But I'm a season ticket holder, so I've always got a seat. So
if you're going into the city, that's not the city, right? It's like that's the edge of the city. It's not down on the viaducts or Bread and Mart or any of that kind of area, which is where if you're gonna have one in the city, that's where you have it, not where it is now.
Yeah.
Or not where it's suggesting it to be, sorry.
Yeah. So that's all the news I had. Richard still can't get in, so we're probably doing this without him tonight, I reckon.
Sounds like it.
So I'll move on to signings. There wasn't that many. Today it was announced that the Panthers have extended Isaac Targo until the end of 2028, which I think's great for them. He's a hell of a talent. And there's been rumours, but nothing confirmed, that the Warriors have re-signed Luke Metcalf for another 2 years. It sounds like it's signed, sealed, and delivered, but until I actually get something from the Warriors announcing it, I don't like to say that it's confirmed, because we never bloody know. It wasn't that long ago that we were told that Braden Hammond and Ueli was all but guaranteed to be a Warrior, and he signed with the Sharks. Simon said he thinks the Warriors should partner up with the new Auckland A-League franchise and see if they can get a stadium in the waterfront. Then you can probably have a better place for a bar. Yeah, all the talk about the waterfront stadium, I think if it ever does happen, I could see the Warriors moving there. I know there's a staunch, as we'll know of anyone who watches this show, there's a staunch anti-Eden Park feeling with a lot of Warriors fans. But the waterfront is a compromise. It's easier to get to and whatnot. So that could be a possibility. But if a stadium, we've been talking about a waterfront stadium for as long as I can remember. And I don't know if we'll ever get there before my time's up, let's just say. It seems to always just be an idea on the horizon.
Until Ports of Auckland are moved,
yeah,
it ain't happening. And the amount of politics that's around that is unreal. So that is not happening. anytime soon until that, I say, until ports of Auckland are sorted out.
Yep. So that was it for signings, just the two. So I'll go to injury ward, which, as I told you, Paul, that there was so many injuries that I had to, you know, pick and choose the bigger ones, I guess. And Nicholas has said Richie is so disgusted with the way that we lost steam after our word being first 20 minutes that he's refusing to show up tonight. Yeah, it's very disrespectful from him of all the nights to not come tonight. But it is what it is. So, yeah, injuries. Tom Gilbert from the Dolphins, we talked about it last week, Paul. He did his ACL in the trial in Auckland. On his plane ride home from Auckland after his ACL, he actually got a blood clot, which didn't do him that well. He's okay now, but what it has meant is that his ACL surgery is being delayed for around 3 months. So, yeah, he was already out for the season, but it's not good to hear something like that happen. But, yeah, it just seemed like one of those one in a million chances when you have to travel on a plane after an injury like that, which, you know, sucks. But what do you do? Do you keep him in New Zealand? It's not ideal. But, yeah. Hopefully he is on the mend once he gets that surgery in about 3 months. And then we'll keep – the Dolphins have got two more, Paul. So Connolly Lemuelu, I've said that wrong again, has a suspected dislocated patella, which could lead to more than 3 months on the sideline if he requires surgery. They're kind of playing it by ear to see if he will be okay to go without surgery and come back earlier. And then Ray Stone failed his HIA and will miss round two. So a few big knocks for the Dolphins, which in the past we've talked about their issues with depth still. So it's not good for them. But Josh Adokar from the Bulldogs, he's also out for at least this week. He got an AC joint injury, and they said it wasn't as severe as originally feared. So he hopefully won't even miss 1 week for them. Warriors. I'm not sure how we're going to talk about this one properly because Wade Egan injured his elbow and required scans. Kurt Capewell did something to his rib cartilage, and they've both been named to play this week. So if it's cloaks and daggers and closer to the day, we're going to see some swaps. Rumors, my rumored thought on it is that Wayne Egan will not play and Kurt Capewell will. But, yeah, I'm not too sure. It's not good when you're listening to the team listing and the players you think are going to be gone to rest are still there. Great to see them play on if that's the case, but it's week two in my opinion, and I think this is the kind of commitment you want from your team when you're in the finals or in the finals hunt at the end of the year and you need to push through. But week two when you know what's the case – you give Egan a week off and he's back together, or he goes out there, pushes it again and prolongs it and you find him out for longer. I'm not sure. Capewell, I'm a bit different because his injury, you can needle up and get through, and we kind of need him in his position, but then we need Egan too. So it's really hard. I don't know. I commend them for their toughness, but I'm hoping it's the right call and that the club's got the right idea with what they're doing. But yeah, what's your thoughts on that, Paul?
Look, I mean, the last thing you want to be doing is getting someone backing up this injury and suddenly they're out for the season, right? So this is a good time to be using. I mean, obviously, you want to get your first one on the board, so it's not fun. And traveling away to the storm isn't going to be an easy one. So I can understand from that point of view that you want to get your season going, but it might be a. And it would be a difficult place to really blood someone or give someone who back up, say, hey, here's your chance. But the flip side of that is, yeah, you don't want to be killing your players too early in the season.
Yeah, so we'll see. They've got basically up to 24 hours before kickoff, which is 9:30 Saturday night, to name the actual 17. That's, I think, to reduce it down. And then it's an hour before kickoff that they have to say what their 17 is. So, we might know a bit earlier. We might not know till the final, that final time at like 8:30 on Saturday night on what's going. And then, yeah, Ross has said, is there any consequence for naming players then pulling them out? No, the only you can name, you get to name 22 players. And the only time you get in trouble is if you use someone that isn't in that 22. You need a special permission from the NRL. So if you name the 22 and then you decide Jacob Laban, I'll pull him out of the top of my head because he's not named. If you say, no, we need Jacob Laban to come in and replace Kurt Capewell, they would need the NRL to approve that. So you generally, because it's on a Tuesday, you generally name the 22 that you know your 17 will make. And you can do as many cloaks and daggers as you want to do as long as they're in that 22 list, which doesn't make it good for tipping and stuff when you're not sure how many players are going to be in or not. But
or your fantasy team.
Yeah. Cape was in my fantasy team, so I need to know if he's playing or not. Otherwise, I'm in trouble.
I mean, the only, I mean, any kind of real consequence, I think, really, probably is if you fly out, because obviously you're going to be traveling with a team to an away game. And then if someone pulls up injured during the warm-up, that could be a problem then as to who you've actually got there if you're trying to get, if you're going to try and get someone through that injury or something. But so yes, that might be the only problem, I guess, is when someone injures themselves in the warm-up.
Yeah, that was the thing I was going to talk about, actually, because the New South Wales Cup, which is like reserve grade, Paul, they've named their team. They're playing in Pukekohe on, I think, it's Sunday at 1 o'clock. And Chanel Harris-Tavita, who is named in the Warriors team, in the 22, is named a start for the team in Pukekohe, which kind of, unless... they got the same type of rules, so it could be a last-minute thing where he's pulled out of that and pulled into the Warriors team. But until you see his name come off that starting halves position there, I think it's fair to say he won't be travelling unless they're going to send him to Melbourne and then that night send him back because he has to play, but I don't see that happening. So I feel like Chanel is probably one that won't make the trip, but... Jazz is on there too. Jazz is on the list and he's named to play in Pukekohe as well. So, I don't know. It's all cloaks and daggers stuff. It makes it very hard to talk about. I'll move on. Siegel, Jason Saab, we talked about him last week. He injured his hamstring in Las Vegas. They had to do scans, which they hadn't done before our show last week, but they have now, and he's going to miss at least the next 6 weeks. Which is a massive loss for Manly. He's one of their strike weapons, so sucks for them, basically. Hopefully he recovers soon. And then Jai Arrow is the last one from the Rabbitohs. It's another Egan Capewell situation because he's injured his rotator cuff, and he could miss the rest of the season, or he could be playing this week, could be playing next week. They're not really telling us how bad it is and how long he'll be gone for. They basically said it's a season-ending thing if he needs surgery, but if he decides not to have surgery, he can come back quicker and run the risk of further injuring it.
And with them playing on Thursday with a short turnaround, the last thing in the world he should be doing is playing that particular game, right?
Yeah.
Even if he decides, I'm going to play on, right, well, recover properly from your previous game. You don't want to be going in tired with an injury. You're just adding up all the red flags that's going to say you're going to do something serious. So yeah, him being named in that team to me is a bad sign.
Yeah, but yeah, we'll probably have more news on that next week.
To be fair, they didn't play last weekend, did they? They played the weekend before because they were playing in
Vegas.
In Vegas, so actually, that's why that doesn't count. It's not a short turnaround for them because obviously they've had a long turnaround. So, ignore what I said.
I try to, but they're playing tomorrow night against the Broncos. He has been pulled out of that game, so he's at least not playing this week. But the talk was that they're hoping he'll be back the week after, which I don't think is going to be possible. Before we get into the games, we've got Naughty Boy Corner. 9 fines were given out in round 1, as we did last year. There were so many fines every week. We don't talk about all of them, otherwise Paul gets angry that we're here too long. So we go with just the suspensions. And there was only one, which was Spencer Lenu, which was from the week before. Verdict was done this week. He got an 8-week ban. There's been some people have said it's too long. People like Jonathan Thurston said it's too short. I think looking at the schedule, it was really the only way that they could go, because any shorter than 8 weeks, they run the risk of having him return to play the Broncos again. But if they do 8 weeks, he misses the Broncos catch up and he is back in time to play the Warriors. So I feel that's probably more the reason for the time. They didn't want him to do his punishment, come back in his first game is against the team that he was, you know, got in trouble playing against the first time. We talked about it before we went live. Do you have any opinion on the length, Paul? I think 8 weeks is fine for me. Richard still can't get on.
We discussed a whole bunch of different ones that have got different they're different lengths for different kind of abusive comments towards different groups pre-show, didn't we? And sort of homophobic ones had got 4 weeks. Ones talking about people with physical disabilities had got 2 weeks plus some extra bits and bobs. To me, it does seem from looking at the kind of previous records of what NRL have done, this is at the higher end. But again, I'm not. I think those other ones should probably be longer. That this is probably about right.
Yeah, I think like Thurston came out saying, you know, 12 weeks. I think 12 weeks is too long. I understand the whole, you know, putting. Getting a message across. I think the 8 weeks does that. I don't think we're going to have anyone make that mistake again. So that's kind of what you want. I think the reason I feel like I'm going to be stealing directly from them, but the NRL 360 have discussed it at length, but they said the biggest issue with it was the length of time it took to have the judiciary hearing. So, like, it happened in Las Vegas. They had it on, I can't even remember the day. It wasn't that long ago. So it was, like, over 10 days since the incident that they did it, where usually you do it in the weekend, the next Tuesday it happens. So the longer it was out there, the more people talked about it and the more expectations around it. And you were never going to have you weren't going to have a decision that was going to make everyone happy. You have some people saying, you know, nothing, don't punish him at all. Others say, never let him play again. And then everyone else is in the middle. So,
Look, it's one of the, also, there'd only been two games. It's the beginning of the season. There's not much to talk about as well. It hit that vacuum and filled the vacuum, as you say, and hence perhaps has ended up being talked about more than it needed to be. Let's hope that this is a clear statement. This isn't acceptable. No one else do it. The fact that his team are putting everyone through diversity training is one. But I mean, it'd be great if all the teams took a stand and said, right, we're all going through diversity training. We're all going to go through domestic abuse training. We're all going to go through and just go through all of them, just get them done. And say, right, it's an annual thing, folks. You all get this training. And there's no excuses. None of you can be ignorant about this stuff now, because you know what? We're educating you all. Let's make the players better people.
Yeah. So, that's all we have for that. So we'll go into our review, which will be great without Richard, because he usually says all the team or all the try scorers that I can't pronounce. But we'll go in and do my best. Thankfully, I've got Richard's notes that he sent me beforehand, so I can say what he was thinking too. But first up, we had on Thursday night, the Raiders defeating the Knights 28-12. There were try for the Raiders. Zach Hosking, Danny Levi, Xavier Savage, Jordan Rapana, and Hudson Young scored. And for the Knights, Tyson Frizzell and Jackson Hastings. So I'll start. obviously, because I'm the one here. Raiders surprised many people here. Playing in Newcastle was never easy, but they were gritty. They made the most of every mistake the Knights made. Nothing flash, but an impressive display of solid footy, big forward effort, and the backs capitalizing off it will not be the easy beats that many predicted. Richard's note on the Raiders was he said he thought the Raiders looked far better than he was expecting. He thought the forwards laid a really good platform, and off the back of it, Jamal Fogarty was able to apply pressure with his kicking game. The Raiders put the foot on the throat in the second half and came up with a comprehensive win. His thoughts on the Knights, he said a really subpar performance from the Knights. I thought they wilted under pressure from the green machine. They looked to be lacking cohesion and slickness they had in their 10-game winning streak last year. And my thoughts on the Knights was it was a major disappointment for the home crowd. The Knights just never looked in the contest for me. They made 15 errors and just struggled to string any offense together. One of several teams that got a wake-up call in round one, but better to get it now than towards the end of the season. And, Simon said never surprised, trust in Ricky.
And look, I mean, 90% completion rate by the Raiders. Look after the footy, go through your phases, make those guys do a lot of work. Knights 68%, just not looking after that pill. As you say, you make too many errors. If you're not going to make the other team work, then you're not going to tie them out, and you're going to be put under a lot more pressure and have to, and that told in the second half, you say.
Yeah, and my player that stood out was Morgan Smithies, a bit biased as a former Wigan player coming down to the NRL, but I thought he had a solid first outing, looked very strong, and I think it's going to be a good addition to their forward pack. And Richie picked Jamal Fogarty, who, you know, is the big man on campus now, as the main half with Jack Wyden gone. And like Richard said, he did everything right. So I was very happy because he is one of my halfbacks in my fantasy team. So he did me very proud. A good contest there, which segues us into a not as nice one, with the Sharks defeating the Warriors 16-12. So the Sharks scored three tries through Jesse Ramien, Ronaldo Mulatalo, and Siosifa Talakai. And then the Warriors got tries through Adam Fanua-Blake and Luke Metcalf. So for me, the Sharks, they looked a little shell-shocked at the start of the match, but they hung in there and never gave up. Wasn't their best performance by any means, but they defended their goal line well and did just enough to squeak out a few tries. And perhaps their flat-track bully tag may come off this year. Richard's thoughts on the Sharks. He said, slow start for the Sharkies. They hung into the game long enough to change the momentum in their favour. He thought their defence was really strong, far better than any defensive effort they produced last year. Real gritty win, which is great for their confidence in 2024. His thoughts on the Warriors, he said it was a great start for the Wires. Looked fast and slick right out of the gate. Unfortunately, towards the back end of the first half, errors and penalties crept into the game, which swung the momentum. Plenty to work on for the boys if they're to rediscover their mojo. My thoughts on the Warriors, that first 20 minutes, they looked unstoppable. They were playing with fast ruck speed and marching up the field with some big efforts from the back. But then those errors, like Richard said, started to leak into the game. And despite spending a lot of time on the Sharks' half, or Sharks' red zone, basically, they couldn't crack the defensive line. Early days, but definitely a lot of work to be done. And I'm sure you're going to do something that breaks my heart and say something bad about my team, Paul.
Well, I was going to say that the Warriors' better completion rate had the ball more, so in theory. But then five forced dropouts and getting yourself caught behind your own line five times. Is that right?
That was us doing it to the Sharks.
Oh, you forced that onto them as well. Oh, geez. Yeah. Then
there's a rule change that. There's a question Richard's given me that I'll answer about that part of it. But, there's been a rule change that's changed dropouts a bit, which...
Right. It's like the stats say that the Warriors should have come away this one, but they just didn't... stats don't matter if you don't score the points. You've got to deliver down the end, haven't you?
Yeah. And we both picked the same player to start out. From the losing team, we picked Adam Fanua-Blake. was a monster effort from him. He had 56 minutes, but which is less than we used to from him, but he ran for over 200 meters. He had a line break that was very back-like for a prop. Scored a nice try. Just very good. And as I said to you, Paul, before we went on air, it was good to see he's going to the Sharks next year. So he showed the Sharks what they're paying big money for. But it also showed Warriors fans that, yes, he is already leaving to another club at the end of the year, but he hasn't given up on what he needs to do this year. The fact that he was one of the best players on the field instead of just going, I can just rest this year, which he had come out and said he was never going to do. He was going to be all in or not there at all. So, yeah, good to see. So we'll move on to some people may say a great game. I thought it was boring as all heck. I had to watch most of this in my car because of the traffic leaving the stadium from the Warriors game. So I was sitting on a side road watching it on my phone. But the Storm defeated the Panthers 8-0. So one try to the Storm, Remus Smith. So it was a real grind fest, I thought. I didn't think either team would be overly happy, but the Storm got the job done. They made a lot of errors themselves, and they missed Munster and Nelson Asofa Solomona, but they did just enough for the win, which is all you can really do when you're going up against the defending three-time champs. Makes me really concerned, though, about a big bounce back from the Storm this week when they play the Warriors.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Richard, talking about the Storm, he said somehow they just kept turning up and getting results here in round one. Yeah, I think I forgot that stat last week. Craig Bellamy has never lost in round one as the Storm coach. So he's kept that record. Potentially this is his last year, so he might have kept that for his entire Storm coaching career. But yeah, Richard thought the loss of Munster might be enough to tip the odds in Panthers' favour, but it was a tenacious defensive effort from Melbourne to keep turning the Panthers away. And then he said about the Panthers, they showed last year there's no point in reading into what they do in round one. There wasn't enough to convince me that they won't be a force later in the year once they find their way. I've kind of got the same. I thought the Panthers' recent form was starting slow. It continued, obviously. They just looked clunky and a little out of sync. But you know that when they click, they're going to be the team to beat once again. We kind of did it last year. We got sucked in, Paul, last year. They lost the World Cup challenge. Then they lost round one, which is exactly what's happened again this year. And we were kind of saying, the Panthers have finally lost a couple of players that they actually needed, and they're going to fall apart. And then that didn't happen. So I'm not going to say that this year. I'm going to wait, give us a couple of months and see what they are doing. You know, in 3 months' time, if they're sitting number one, no one's going to remember this game. So,
I'm sure we will. But the
we will. I talked about it last year. The Panthers lost to the Tigers last year. So,
but Emilio, has Rich been axed due to budget cuts, Paul? Absolutely. Just like TVNZ is getting rid of their newsroom, whatever it is. We've had to reclaim Richie's laptop, and so it's not working. He'll be back next week, hopefully, technology permitting. If they've been done in 40-0 or something like that, then maybe you could say, oh yeah, geez, it's a problem for them. They've lost by one score against against the top three side from last year. They've not had their preseason has been the worst of everybody because they don't have those three preseason games or two or three seasons that everyone else had. They just have one game over in the UK. I wouldn't read anything into this at all long term. On that one, and stats are really misleading when you've only got one score at the end of the day, let's be honest. So there's nothing really to pull out. This was a close game.
We had differing opinions on our player that stood out in this game. It was really hard to pick because I didn't feel like anyone stood head and shoulders above anyone else, but I went with Harry Grant. I thought he did everything you expect from him, and it was a solid effort. A lot of defensive work he had to do. And Richard went with Ryan Pappenhausen because he likes picking the backs, I guess. Pap did all right. He's, slowly getting back into being a regular after all his injuries. So it's good to see him get through a game without injuries. So very happy to see that because he's also in my fantasy team. But next game, first game on Saturday, the Eels defeated the Bulldogs 26-8. So the Eels, Morgan Harper scored a try. Bryce Cartwright got a double and Bailey Simonson got a try. And then for the Bulldogs, Blake Wilson and Stephen Crichton. So for me, it was a pretty consistent performance from Parramatta here. A massive game for their pack with five forwards running over 100 metres. Bryce Cartwright continuing his form from last year and the backs look sharp. Definitely an improvement from last year. For Richard, he said it was a good, strong win for the Eels, even with Mitch Moses struggling through the game with an injury. Will be interesting to see the level of consistency we see from the Blue and Golds this year, which is always their issue. I think they're renowned for beating the Panthers every year, but not winning against anyone else. Very impressed with their effort. For Richie, about the Dogs, he said it was disappointing from the Dogs. His expectation of them this year was going to be anyway that combinations were going to take time with a number of squad changes, which is kind of what you saw here with the clunky effort. For me, it was the same old Bulldogs. I'm not as nice as Richie. The team hasn't clicked yet with all those signings. They've signed some good talent, but without some better middles and halves, I think their pain's going to continue. They basically signed every player under the sun bar the core that you need. You need good middles and good halves to kind of lead everyone else. You can have the best centers and everything in the world, but if you haven't got a player that can put them into space, what's the point of having them? Which is kind of what we saw. Didn't help with Josh Adakar going off early too, but I'm not that confident in the Bulldogs, but now that I've said it, you watch them and their rise to success as I put the jinx on them. We picked the same player to stand out. I'll just say it now before you give your two cents, Paul. It was Bryce Cartwright. He got a double, has done everything. He's been one of the strangest players in his career. He's so up and down, but since coming to the Eels, he's really found a rich vein of form. So long may it continue for him. But your thoughts before I move on?
If you're going to have a completion rate of 72%, and then if you're going to have 25 ineffective tackles, you those things, sort those out, makes it hard to beat versus the Bulldogs and work from there. Just makes it hard to beat.
Here we go to the next game I don't really want to talk about, but the Dragons defeated the Titans 28-4. So the Dragons, they scored five tries. Tyrell Sloan got three of them, then Kyle Flanagan and Zach Lomax got the other two, and then Khan Pereira got the only try for the Titans. So my point, Dragons, they know how to ruin my weekend. They looked very impressive here, taking my biases away, but they were up against a poor defensive outfit, if I can put one little asterisk next to it. But they didn't take their foot off the gas. They very dangerous with the ball in hand, and while I think it's a case of early ripe, early rotten, I think they're going to be good enough to get away from that wooden spoon conversation, which I predicted for them. So I'll give them that credit. And then Richard, let's see if he said anything in here about the Dragons that's going to piss me off. I was really surprised on how on song the Dragons looked. It's taken one game for me to seriously question my wooden spoon prediction. It's early days, but it looks like Shane Flanagan has got the squad on board and playing for each other. Again, like I said about the Eels, let's see it consistently, but it seems like they won't be a free 2 points if they keep this up. And then his take on the Titans. He said, awful from the Titans, look like a one-man team out there. They're missing a couple of big guns, but even selections, even with those selections, it doesn't look right. AJ Brinson, for example. Yeah, they got AJ playing in a position that's not his. It's a bit weird, but yeah, mine was kind of the same. With the exception of Big Tino, the Titans just never got off the bus. Dragons didn't give them any chances, but even the slim chances they got, the Titans offered very little. You would hope that they would have shown a bit of fight here to give their fans some hope, but I think it's going to be a long season for them.
Yeah, again, look, 41 missed tackles, 16 ineffective tackles as well by the Titans. If you're going to defend like that, then yeah. Is that down to some fantastic running lines and power running by the Dragons? I don't know. The Dragons will have sterner tests during the rest of the season.
Yeah. The Dragons did a lot of good stuff attack-wise as well. It's not all just on the Titans being rubbish, but yeah, it's definitely a conversation about both that led to this. We differed on our players that stood out. I went with Tyrell Sloan, you know, looked dangerous, looks confident, got a hat trick, and Richard went with Zach Lomax. Zach Lomax was fantastic as in the position he doesn't want to be in. But he was really good out there. I'm worried about how good the Dragons going to be since I always refuse to pick them in my tips.
And I'm going to go with Jacob Little, who got the most fantasy points.
Yeah, that's an easy way to do it if you haven't watched the game, Paul. You know, Bjorn said he can't wait to see Brad talk positive about the Dragons this year. We all know I hate the Dragons, but if they play well, I will admit it. I'm not that biased. I will say it through gritted teeth, but I will say it. So we go to the last game. It's probably the fastest we've done these reviews without Richie here. It's good. You know,
it is.
I just get his points and read it for him. Cowboys absolutely demolished the Dolphins, 43-18. So we'll sit here for half an hour going through all the tries. So the Cowboys scored 7 tries. Zach Labick got a double. Then Tommy Dearden, Jeremiah Nanai, Kyle Fout, Murray Talangi, and Hylam Lukey. And then for the Dolphins, they got 3 tries through Thomas Fletcher, Josh Kerr, and Jack Bostock. So just an attacking clinic from the Cowboys. They put on a show and never looked in doubt. Their backs had a field day with the entire back 5 causing plenty of headaches for the Dolphins. They all were running in triple digits. Would be hard to imagine them playing at this level against tougher teams, though. But it's a massive improvement from their disappointing 2023 form. Richard said about the Cowboys, like he was thinking with the season prediction, the Cowboys look a real danger this year. If the squad can stay healthy, he can't see them missing the 8 again. And his thoughts on the Dolphins, he said it was a disappointing effort from them. They don't get the fast start that they did last year. Nice for big name recruit Fletcher, the score on debut. Not much else in the way of highlights. For me, I thought the Dolphins looked to be in the fight for the first 10 minutes, but it was all over after that. The Hammer had one of his worst games of his life, despite the dallying points he received. And the forwards, with the exception of Flegler, were kept on the back foot. They surprised everyone last year, Paul, but I think that sheen's gone now, and I think they're going to struggle because of it.
Yeah, second season syndrome, but also the early injuries. So drawing the interesting thing you mentioned about like 4 players who are already out. I think that's going to be a big struggle for them, have those injuries and to have started like this. Even though they gave away more points, actually they missed less tackles. They missed and less ineffective tackles than the previous game. But clearly the Cowboys were doing something very good there to create spaces and
it was crazy watching them attack like they did. But yeah, that was the round. It's the longest round we've had, going over, you know, one and a bit weeks, but it's all over. which means we can talk about the ladder. If you've got the ladder, I know you've got tips as well, but we'll go with ladder first. So we've got the ladder up. Top eight, we've got the Cowboys first, Dragons second, Eels third, Raiders fourth, Manly fifth, Roosters sixth, Melbourne seventh, and Sharks eighth. And then for the bottom nine.
The other person's the other half, right?
Yeah.
Then the Tigers are on the edge of the eight there. That's the best they'll be all season, let's be honest. And they haven't even played yet. Then we've got the Warriors, followed by the Tigers and the Broncos down to 12th. We've got the Rabbitohs, Knights, and Bulldogs, and with the Titans and the Dolphins fighting it out for that wooden spoon position at the moment.
Yeah, it's hard to talk about the ladder after one game being played. So, yeah, it is what it is. I was riding that last game, Paul, I can tell you, riding the edge of my seat, hoping that the Cowboys would get enough points for the points differential to go to first place. Otherwise, we were doing this show with the Dragons in first, which I didn't want. So I was very happy to see those tries keep coming. But yeah, it's going to take a few weeks before we can really start talking about the ladder in a serious manner. But yeah, at least the Warriors are the top of the teams that got no points. I'll give them that.
the best losing team.
So then we'll go to our tips. If you've got that up, it's a bit harder to see for the people online than what I used to make because of the amount of people. But as I said, we've got 14 people. Jono, who was leading when we talked about it last week after the Vegas games, he kept on to his lead. He got five games right. You'll see the yellow highlight there. That is on ACT Hellcat. He used a joker, which you get double points. But it didn't help him. He got four. And then from 6th to 10th, which includes me and Simon and Bjorn, we all got three games. And then 11th to 14th, all only got two, including Richard, who through no fault of my own with how the ladder has worked, he is dead last. So again, a bit like the ladder, it's not really much to talk about with it here until we get into the nitty-gritty, but it's great to have more than just Richie, myself, and Simon. There's more of a chance of someone taking my throne, I guess.
Well, yeah, Jono on at the moment, but so it's five games so far. But, yeah, so a slender lead, but yeah, we'll see how it goes over the next few weeks.
Yeah, so that's all that. We'll go to questions. I saw you start a couple, so we've got some questions from everyone.
So what do you get for your birthday? Callum wants to know. Apart from obviously a no-show from Richie and me singing to you at the beginning of the show. And obviously getting the kiss as well.
Yeah, and the kiss. It could have at least been Millie Boyle, Paul, but you know. I'm pointing. I think I've got it right. The Heritage jersey behind me. My lovely partner, she went halves with me on the jersey to make sure I could get it before it sold out. And so it was an early birthday present. And that's it, really. I haven't got anything else yet other than well wishes. And, my nana gave me some money. God bless her. But, yeah, it's just another day for me due to the fact that I – didn't do any plans because I was doing the show. This is more important. And all right, Nicholas, yeah, you can say the question.
Will Herbie and Fledge ultimately regret leaving Brisbane for Redcliffe?
I think so. It's going to be interesting because I feel the Broncos are going to miss them terribly. But yeah, I don't see them being the answer to the Dolphins becoming a premiership contender either. Who's to say, you know, it's not like they've signed a one-year deal. Who's to say the Dolphins, you know, kick it up a gear and get better next year? I don't know. I'm leaning more towards, I think they might go, I'd rather stay with a team that's got a shot of winning the title. Yeah, it's hard to say. There's more than just performances on the field that make these decisions. I think they're getting a hell of a lot more money playing for Redcliffe than they were with the Broncos as well. So they might not get that success on the field, but they might be able to buy an extra home or two.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, it depends on, yeah, there's a couple of things there. Is, yeah, are they making more money? If it was championships they wanted, you don't move to an expansion team for championships.
No. And was that all the questions?
Just Nicholas pointing out that, yeah, Richie dead last. What's why he didn't turn up?
Yeah, that makes sense too. So I don't know if you're going to be able to answer the question I had for Richie, but we'll try. I'll go with his one first. I'll go with it. His question for me was, did any of the new rule tweaks this year stand out for you in round one? And then any opinion, positive or negative? And that's why I cut you off in the Warriors game. The rule about the short, we talked about it, I think, in week one of the show this year. One of the rules the NRL changed is if you get you repeat a set, the team has to do a dropout to you. And before, if they attempted a short dropout where they can try to get the ball back, if it went out or they touched it before the 10, they got penalised. They took that away where the other team just gets the ball, which encourages more teams to do short terms, which I was fine with until it happened to the Warriors where they had all those repeat sets. And for the life of them, they could never get any of the short ones. That's a reflection on them too. You have to be better and try to get those. But yeah, we're just stealing other people's comments and thoughts, Paul, on this show now. On Bloke in a Bar, they were really frustrated about it too because they said the earning a repeat set, there is now not really a reward for that. Like they were talking about, like Sean was kicking precise kicks, getting those extra sets, and then there was no reward for it. He said, like, even if they do a short kickoff and the Warriors get it, they were saying there should be a, like, if the you force a dropout and then you get the ball, you should get a 7-tackle set instead of the normal one as like a reward for it, potentially. They're not going to change it after they've just changed it. But yeah, it's probably more frustration that the Warriors couldn't get the ball than the actual rule itself. Like I wouldn't be talking about it if all five were short and all five the Warriors regathered. It's just a tweak that's going to take getting used to. I feel like it's going to take that aspect of your game away where maybe attacking teams won't look at trying to get repeat sets and increasing that pressure. They'll just go, well, I may as well run on the last tackle and make them start right on their try line and do pressure that way, potentially. But again, that's why Richie's usually on the show, because as a prop, I can't really talk in depth about all those strategies. But do you have any idea on that, Paul?
This might just be a matter of the Warriors need to train that better now that the rules changed.
At the end of the day. It is what it is. And then my question for him was, it's fair to say that round one had its fair share of surprises. Which team surprised you the most in either a good or bad way? So as you watched none of it, but you got to see the stats.
As I watched none of it, but I got the stats. And obviously, you've got to say the way the Dragons came out was really surprising. The people have given the Titans kind of like, yep, they're an up and coming. You've said that lots of times over the last couple of seasons that they're up there. They're supposedly heading in the right direction. It still seems to be just heading that way rather than actually getting anywhere. So you've got to be impressed by the Dragons one there. Disappointed, I guess, the Bulldogs. From memory, this is the... Because when we said who was going to be the head coach that was going to get us fired, I think it was the Bulldogs. They've got the new head coach from...
Yeah, we picked no one, but we said the Eels and the Bulldogs ones are at the most risk if things don't go well. And
I thought I picked the.
You did. You picked Cameron Serrato. I've got your pitches.
Yep.
So
I guess in some ways that shouldn't be a surprise to me, because I said he's in trouble. But I guess in some ways, look, you've gone and got yourself this new supposedly flash head coach from Penrith, the three times champions, and to start out quite that badly has got to be upsetting, really there. And I guess the other ones are, it's clearly the Cowboys there with the kind of three teams that have really stood out. On the other side of things. So with the Cowboys facing the Dragons this weekend, it'll be interesting to see who's the pretender out of those two.
Yeah, I think you already know who I'm picking for that. But I would say the Dragons surprised me in both a good and bad way. They surprised me with how well they played, but I felt very bad about it. So I'll leave it there. So any other questions, or is that all of it?
I think you probably also, I'm surprised you're not saying the Panthers haven't perhaps surprised you, or the fact to have got zeroed.
The scoreline surprised me, but not the result, because I picked the Storm in that game. But I didn't expect 8-0.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, that's probably the big surprise is the quality of that game from a scoring point of view, more than anything else. I think it's probably one of your biggest surprises.
Yeah. So that is all of it. We'll move on to round two. As always, we start off with the team list for the Warriors and Storm. So I don't know if you want to have a go at any of this, or you want me to run them off, Paul. I'm happy to do it.
You can go the Warriors.
Yeah. So we've got it fullback for the Warriors. We've got Tane Tuipiki. On the wings, we've got Dallin Martinez-Lesniak and Marcelo Montoya. Centres, we've got Rocco Berry and Roger Tuivasa-Sheck. In the halves, we've got Luke Metcalf, Sean Johnson. Front rows, Adam Fanua-Blake, Wade Egan, Mitchell Barnett. Second row is Jackson Ford and Kirk Capewell, with Tohu Harris at lock. And then the four-man interchange names so far is Freddie Lussick, Tom Ali, Bunty Afoa, and Dylan Walker. And then the Storm. Do you want to attend that, or can I do it?
No, we've probably got the Storm. Let's talk about the Warriors. But the
Same 17 they named as last week, which was more surprising due to those injuries for me. But if they're willing to play, I like seeing the same team week in, week out to actually build.
That's the main comment, isn't it? Those Wayne Egan and I forgot who the other player was that you said was injured.
Kirk Capewell.
And Kirk Capewell, two potentially there. And then what was also interesting was that the Jazz and Chanel have both been named in the reserve grade team. So interesting to see they're on the 23 when, it's in Melbourne. Yeah. And yet the reserve grade team are playing in Auckland. So
Pukekohe,
close as, so it's a bit of a, so it's on sort of one day after the other, because
9:30 Saturday night and 1 o'clock Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a strange one there that you've got to name someone in your 23 and then you've also named someone to start in a game in a different country less than 24 hours later. So it's a bit of a weird one there. We'll see how that all pans out.
Yeah, but I think they have the cutoff where it's 22 players and then I think it's 24 hours before the game, they have to reduce it down to 20. So I think at that point, that's going to be before they would be traveling to Melbourne. So I think at that point, if Chanel and Jazz definitely aren't in contention for the 17, they'll be in that dropout. And it'll be like, if it's still the 17 now, it'll be like Adam Pompey and Ali, because Tamari Martin is also named in the New South Wales Cup. I forgot. So out of the five, there's three of them. So it would be Ali. I think Ali's actually named in that game too, actually. So yeah, I don't know. It's weird.
So it's a real strange one there. There's something going on there at the Warriors, but especially early in the season without that many injuries either, I don't think so. You should have a full squad. So, but anyway, moving on then. Yeah. The Storm, Ryan Pappenhuyzen at the back there. with Warbrick and Coates on the wings. Smith and Meaney are in the centres with Pétez and Hughes running the show. A front row of Kamikamika, Grant and King.
Close enough. Yeah.
With Chan and Katoa, and then Lorelio at the back there. On the bench, Walshaw, Welch, Lewis and McDonald.
Yeah, and it's kind of the team I expected from Melbourne as well. The big out for them at the moment, obviously, is Cameron Munster, who is normally their six. It gives me a little bit of confidence. But this game is the worst game of the year every year for the Warriors. Last year, they only narrowly lost. It was the Anzac game last year. But last time they won in Melbourne was 2014. So 10 years ago. It's not the best hunting ground for the Warriors, but if that 17's named and everyone's healthy, I think it's the right time for them to strike. And you kind of need them to after losing that first game. I think this was kind of a game you could let slip if you bet the Sharks in round one, but you don't want to be 0-2. We're going to see what happens. But I don't know what Richard picked, so he wouldn't tell me. He's keeping it cloak and dagger, I guess. But I have gone with the Storm, unfortunately. I'm picking to win, Paul, so I leave my heart out of it.
Simon's disappointed it's not an Anzac Day game this year.
I'm disappointed too, but I'm not if the only way it was going to happen was we're playing Anzac Day in Melbourne again. I really want one here in New Zealand. It would have been great if Melbourne came here, but they like the money they get from Anzac Day playing in Melbourne, unfortunately. But yeah, it's disappointing, but yeah, I want to be able to go to an Anzac Day game again.
The Storm $1.41. You know, Warriors $2.85. You got to back the Storm.
Yeah, I will say I've picked them in my tips, but I've put money on the Warriors at TAB. So I've gone bay. Simon said there was no real rivalry between the Warriors and Titans. Melbourne Storm, though, he doesn't see an issue with it being played in Melbourne every year. Yeah, I think the big argument for a lot of people, though, is that it's Anzac Day, which is about Australia and New Zealand, and they never want to have a game played in New Zealand, which I think is the vocal point. I think we should always have a game in New Zealand on Anzac Day, in my opinion. Just it makes sense. And the last time New Zealand or the Warriors had an Anzac Day game, it was against the Titans in Auckland. So you've got that, but yeah. It's each to their own. I think what the Storm do on Anzac Day is a great spectacle to watch. But with what the Warriors had shown last year with their match day experience, I think they can do something just as good. So I'm happy for the Warriors to get it and make something of it, you know. There was a first time the Warriors played Melbourne on Anzac Day as well. So, you know, we can start a new one. And it's probably not the best tradition anyway, because we usually got spanked by 50 or more points every year. So it's time maybe to start a new tradition. And maybe if Melbourne sees how good it is over here, they might jump over. But, Simon said the Melbourne Storm game on Anzac Day is very impressive because the AFL actually have a game earlier in the day and it does not affect crowd attendance. Yeah, it's Melbourne's biggest crowd of the season every year, which they might be a bit miffed that they don't have the Warriors, because the Warriors play a big part in that with the amount of Kiwis that live in Melbourne.
Fill out the MCG, which is like 100,000 for that game as well on that day. So it is, it's a massive day, obviously, over there in Melbourne on that day. But
My flatmates who I used to live with, they are in Melbourne now. They've been there almost a year, or it'd be over a year now, because I think I moved into this place like a week ago last year. They didn't go to Anzac Day game because they were like, no, Warriors are rubbish. We don't believe this. how good they're playing at the moment. But they're going this weekend. They said they got tickets, so they're looking forward to their first league game since they've been in Melbourne. But yeah, we'll go to the rest of the round now. So on Thursday, we have Broncos Rabbits. I've gone with the Broncos here. Broncos at home. I didn't pick the Rabbits in the first round either. Oh no, I did. Sorry. I picked them and they burnt me. But yeah, I think the Broncos at home are going to be too much for them. So I've gone Broncos.
Yeah, we got the Broncos finalists last year, $1.38 to $2.95. So yeah, the Broncos definitely going to be the hard favourites there.
Yeah, and then first game on Friday night, we've got Sharks Bulldogs. I've gone with Sharks. I think they showed enough for me last week, and the Bulldogs showed me the exact opposite. So I think it has to go Sharks for me.
Yep, and the Sharks are the strongest favourite all weekend. If they're not the best team by any stretch, but they're up against arguably one of the weakest teams after that first round showing. So Sharks $1.30. The Bulldogs $3.40. So if you want to lose some money, then obviously follow our picks. But yeah.
Second game on Friday.
Yeah, the second one's interesting, actually.
Yeah. Second game on Friday night is Panthers Eels. This one probably took me the longest to pick because the Panthers are slow at the moment and the Eels seem to have the advantage over them and beat them. Any game that's not a finals game, the Eels normally win, but I'm actually going with Penrith. I think they've already lost two games this year. I don't think they want to lose three in a row, so I have to give them the edge.
Maybe, but if you're looking for an outsider to back, I think this is probably a good one with the Eels at $2.90. Quite long odds for a team when the Panthers didn't even score a point last weekend. So the Panthers at $1.39. Yes, they're three times champs, but as we said, the championships aren't won at this time of year. This isn't when they're playing well. So I'd go on those odds. I'd go with the Eels. I think that's where the money is.
Yeah, and then first game on Saturday is the Raiders Tigers. I've gone with the Raiders. Raiders at home. We haven't seen the Tigers yet, so it's hard to judge how good or bad they're going to be. History dictates they're going to be bad. So, I have to go with the Raiders. And, yeah, Simon said the Sharks-Bulldogs game's free-to-air on Sky Open on Friday.
That's cool. Look, I mean, the Raiders also started well, right? I mean, they had a good opening game against an unknown as yet Tigers who we're not expecting much from. So yeah, you got to go Raiders here, $1.45 to $2.65 for the Tigers.
Yeah, and then second game on Saturday, Cowboys Knights. I've gone Cowboys after how the Cowboys played last week. I have to go with them, and they're at home. So yeah, I think it's an easy pick there.
Oh, I got sorry. I mentioned I, I've.
Yeah, you missed up.
I thought it was the Cowboys.
Cowboys Dragons.
Sorry, that's a week after. That's week three. I was looking at the wrong one. Sorry, folks, on that one. You ought to go back the Cowboys in this one. $1.43 to the Knights $2.75. But not necessarily a lot of confidence. I think we're going to have to wait and see as to how sustained is that Cowboys piece. But they are at home. So it doesn't mean they haven't had to travel. So, yeah, it should be good for them. But, yes, but not with a lot of confidence.
Yeah, and then the next game on the last game on Saturday is the Storm and Warriors, which we've already said. I've picked Storm. I've put money on the Warriors. What say you, Paul?
It's got to be, you know, I'm sorry, but the Storm didn't start that great either. Let's be honest, they only got 8 points. So if the Warriors get a good start, they're really in this one. So this is another one of those ones, a bit like the Eels, I think, where actually at $2.85, there's some value there from that point of view, rather than $1.41. That's pretty short odds for a Storm team that only scored one try last week. So I don't expect them to do that again. Look, they are third best, though. They came third last year. They should win this one. But I do see value in that $2.85.
Yeah, and then the first game on Sunday, we have Manly versus the Roosters. I've gone with the Roosters. Both these teams impressed me in Vegas, but I think the Roosters have just looked better in my eyes in terms of attacking form, so I think they're going to do the job here.
And the Roosters are the favourites at $1.67, even though they're away from home. Eagles at $2.15. Sorry, I'm not convinced by the Roosters, but having not watched the games, that's a bit bad. But I'm going with the Seagulls there. I don't want everyone to say anti the Seagulls.
Yeah, and Simon said he went with the Roosters, but this was the hardest game to pick. Yeah, it's another one of those games. And judging by my picks last week, I'm not that confident in all my picks anyway. and the final game is the Dolphins Dragons. Dragons should win this, but I'm going Dolphins because I don't pick Dragons.
Yeah, Dolphins are $1.82. The Dragons actually favourites at $1.83. So it's, look, it's close. An element of this is going to be Dragons back themselves up after that, and how do they actually feel going into a game as favourites? Because boy, oh boy, that's a rare thing for them, right? Where people are actually expecting them to win this weekend. Whereas they normally go with nothing to lose. They've got something to lose this weekend. So this will be a real test of their mental situation at the moment. Ross is doing, I'm doing a Survivor Pick series. What's your lay down winning team for this week?
So that just means which team do I think is most guaranteed to win?
Yep.
Yeah, I think out of all of it, I'd say Raiders. They're playing the Tigers. So I think of any team, I'm the most confident in getting the job done. It'd be actually a toss-up between them and the Sharks, to be honest.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'd have gone Sharks because we actually know the Bulldogs are crap already.
Yeah, I'll say that. Yeah, Sharks. I'll change it to Sharks because, the Tigers might surprise us. I highly doubt it, but they might come out and, ambush the Raiders at home. So Sharks probably, I think, out of every team, Sharks are probably most predictable to win. You watch them lose now and piss everybody off. So that is round two. Everyone that's watching that's in the tipping comp, make sure you got your tips in so you don't miss out. I think the way it's set up, if you do forget your tips, it automatically picks every away team for you. I think that's how I set it up. So you won't get a zero unless every home team wins. Remember to put your tips in so we can make sure Richie stays dead last. So that's it for the NRL, which means we'll quickly run down Super League before we go, Paul. So I haven't been able to watch it yet because it's really hard to watch these games now. But Wigan are now at the top of the table. It's the only undefeated team left, followed St. Helens are second, Catalans third, and Warrington fourth. Lee, Castleford, and London, who are the new team that have come up, are all at the bottom of the ladder as the only teams yet to win a game. So we might get to have that fun little when will the promoted team get their first win, like we did last year, where they went on a massive losing streak before getting a win. The results in round four over there, Warrington defeated Hull KR 22-20. St. Helens defeated Salford. Salford defeated St. Helens, 24-20. Uddersfield defeated Castleford 50-8. 20 Leeds defeated Lee 22-16. Wigan welcomed the newly promoted London with a massive defeat of 60-22. And then Catalans defeated Hull FC 26-12. And then in round five, we've got Salford versus Wigan, Leeds versus St. Helens, Uddersfield versus Hull KR, Hull FC versus Lee, Catalans versus Castleford, and London versus Warrington. And then Bjorn got a question before we sign off, which is good.
Who is the Warriors player who needs a big game this weekend?
To be honest, it'd be Jackson Ford. I know a lot of people, I picked him as my warrior to improve in my review that I did this week. But a lot of people are, throwing the baby with the bathwater. They want him gone out of the team, out of the club, out of the country. They want him gone because he made quite a few errors close to the try line in moments where the Warriors really could have twisted the knife against the Sharks. So I think it's him. He's always known to, you know, he'll make 40 to 50 tackles. He'll run for over 100 meters, but he'll make an error or two, concede a penalty or two every game. It's kind of what you expect. So I think people want to see that discipline side of things with errors and penalties kind of come down a bit, especially this. He's not on there at the moment, Paul, but Jacob Laban is a second rower, very young, but showed a lot of promise in the trials. And I think a lot of people are kind of saying, like, let's give this kid a chance. He could do something that maybe Jackson can't. I'm happy to keep Jackson there. I think you can't write a person off after one game, you know. So, but, yeah, I think everyone's got their eyes on him right now. Cool. You got anyone? Or you don't know? They're just names on a board to you.
No, I don't know. That's I just think RCS probably coming back with a lot of
typical union guy picks the union player.
And I was going to say the guy's just been away for a couple of seasons. Come back with low expectation on his shoulders. Has he still got it? I think he needs to probably let people know that early in the season before, and just remind people why he's there. Especially as he's playing in a new position as well, right? He's not. Everyone's sort of like, oh yeah, well he used to be a good fullback, so we spent all this money on him. Is he actually worth it as a centre? So I think
he's always worth it. He's just still washing the stink of that Auckland Blues off him. Where once that's gone, everything will be fine.
He might be someone who just needs to kind of reassert himself in this team.
Yeah. So I think that's all we have. I don't think anyone else is throwing in questions before we go. So anything else you want to add before we go?
No, sorry, folks, if you I didn't do the show, the Rugby Union show on Monday because I had COVID. I was not expecting to have to spend a full hour and a half talking. I thought I was going to sit in the background and just occasionally pop in. But hopefully Richie's back next week.
Yeah, sorry to everyone that was only watching because of Richie. He always seems to have issues with technical stuff. At least I fixed whatever problem I had where I always cut out around 9 o'clock on every show. But yeah, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us tonight on the Send-Off with Brad and Paul. For your weekly update on rugby league, tune into our show next week at 8 p.m. here on Facebook or at your convenience on iHeartRadio or Spotify. Just remember to search for New Zealand Sport Radio. Thanks for all your help, especially in your condition, Paul. And thank you, everyone, for listening, and good night.
Good night.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.